You're listening to Panel Borders on Resonance 104.4 FM. I'm Alex Fitch, and on this week's show, concluding our month of shows looking at British creators and their take on American superheroes, I'm talking to novelist and comic book writer Simon Spurrier. This show was recorded in front of a live audience at the Vortex Jazz Club in Dalston, in East London, as part of an evening of talks and performances themed around the subject of silver. So naturally, Simon and I are talking about the character of the Silver Surfer, a space opera-themed creation of Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, who Simon himself wrote in a four-issue miniseries that was released by Marvel Comics over the winter of 2007 and 2008. First, though, here's a word from our sponsors.
Resonance FM is London's only non-profit community radio art station, who need your donations to help keep the station and podcasts on air. All the program makers and all the engineers all work for free to bring you shows as diverse as The Bike Show, The Free University of the Airways, Hooting Yard, Speakers Resonance Corner, FM accepts donations in the form of checks, radio, credit and debit cards, radio, bank transfers, country, PayPal and cash. Go to www.resonancefm.com for more details. We also accept hobnobs and teabags. Your donation means our continued existence.
The Silver Surfer first appeared in 1966 in issue 48 of Fantastic Four, which is quite possibly Stan Lee and Jack Kirby's greatest collaboration together, would you agree?
Yes, I think so.
And he appears in all three parts of a trilogy called The Coming of Galactus, which was loosely the basis of the second Fantastic Four movie that came out a couple of years ago. Simon wrote a four-part mini-series for Marvel called Silver Surfer in Thy Name a couple of years ago. But I was wondering, to the audience, who probably may not know an awful lot about the character, apart from the fact he sounds a bit like Lawrence Fishburne, why Stan Lee and Jack Kirby came up with him and his origin within Fantastic Four.
Well, as with all superheroes, there is an origin which is off the page and an origin which is on the page. In this character's case, I would suggest they're probably as fascinating as each other, which is quite unusual for a superhero. Off the page, the story begins with the methodology which these two great names, Stan Lee, who of course created, you know, Spider-Man, Fantastic Four, the X-Men, all these great characters we've all heard of, and Jack Kirby, who's a fantastic artist. And the methodology they had is very different to comic scripting today. These days, you write a comic script and it's almost filmic. You know, I'm writing panels which are describing what's going to happen and then writing the dialogue, and then the poor artist has to go away and try and do something with it. Back then, they had a system where they would sit down together. Stan would come up with a very, very loose version of the story. He would send Jack away. Jack would draw it as he wished. So he was responsible for pacing and sequence and all these things that today we consider to be part of the writer's art. And then at the end, Stan would come back and write the panel dialogue.
Inasmuch that when Stan saw the artwork for the first time, it might be as much a surprise to him.
Yeah, and in fact, the perfect case in point, because in this event, Stan was proposing a story where the Fantastic Four met Galactus. And Galactus is Marvel Universe's space god, if you like. He's an ancient behemoth who trawls the space lanes and eats planets. And the idea was he was going to come to Earth and he was going to eat the Earth. And he sent Jack away to draw this story. And Jack came back with the pages, and in between the Fantastic Four fighting Galactus was this androgynous, silver-skinned man wearing nothing but a pair of pants, zipping around on a surfboard. And Stan was a little troubled and said, "What the hell is going on? I didn't write this guy." And Jack said, "Well, hey, if you're as powerful as Galactus is, you need a herald who's going to travel in front of you and bring the news to doomed planets that Galactus is coming, you're all going to get eaten, make your own arrangements." And Stan said, "Well, I understand that, but what's with the surfboard?" And Jack said, "I'm bored of drawing spaceships." And that's the origin of the Silver Surfer off the page.
And a lot of the stories about silver that are coming up tonight are set in the late 1960s. And with the Silver Surfer being created in 1966, obviously surfer culture was something that was being disseminated to the world at large with the popularity of the Beach Boys et al. And presumably depictions of surfing on film that were released in the cinema. I guess those were the sort of things that were also in the back of Jack's mind?
I think so, and also, I mean, it's worth saying, anybody who tries to work out what was the back of Jack's mind is probably hiding to nothing. But yeah, I mean, that was all in the mix. You've got the Apollo missions obviously rumbling on in the background, you've got Jetsons on TV, you've got this... It was a period where 50s ideas of what the future was going to be like was meeting the future. You know, these people felt like they were living in the future, and it was in certain ways slightly disappointing even. And so Jack has created a character who, in the context of Marvel superheroes, who were all, essentially normal people who have become endowed with amazing superpowers and whose first instinct upon so doing is to go and fight crime, wearing lurid costumes and their underpants, is, you know, and deal with that as you want, but he's created a character who is utterly different, who is a shiny, androgynous, death mask-esque character, with no ears, which is weird. And just sort of stuck him in there, and he has become, what are we, 40-something years later, 44 years later, he is still incredibly affectionately held by all Marvel fans.
Mm. Well, and like you said, it was the era of Apollo, and I just wonder aesthetically as well whether the fact that the surfer is silver came from that 1960s American aesthetic of making machinery silver, whether it's the Airstream Caravan or some of the early rockets.
I think so. I mean, I think, yes, I think that was there. I think there's, you can get quite involved and analytical about it. I mean, there's this idea in comics and in all illustration, actually, in all symbology, that the simpler an illustration, the simpler a character is iconized, the easier it is to endow them with the reader's interest. And so, you know, the obvious example is you've got Tintin, who's very, very iconic drawing of a human being in front of incredibly beautifully realized things. So I concede this is perhaps reading a little too far into it, but you have a character who is completely androgynous and completely empty of all feature. He is just a skin bag on a surfboard.
Well, even more than that, because he's silver, he literally reflects the water.
Yeah, well, quite, oh my God, we are reading into this way more than Jack ever thought. But yeah, that's all there, and you've got these very, I mean, it sounds a cliche, but futuristic ideas. And also, you know, there's this background stuff going on with the idea of aliens, who are generally considered in sort of popular culture to be these very tall, gangly, large-eyed, slightly sinister, but very, very simple aesthetically creatures, and this episode reflects all of these things. But at the same time, in the fictional universe, his origin story is incredibly sophisticated. As I said, this is a world in which the normal way to deal with becoming possessed of superpowers is to go out and find mothers, right? That's what Marvel is asking you to believe is how you deal with having superpowers. It's simple, it's a little bit perverted, but it's there, that's the way you deal with it. Silver Surfer has this incredible story where, so thousands of years ago on the planet Zenlar, and you know, we've got Norrin Rad, we've got Zenlar, this is telling you something about the terminology of sci-fi and Marvel at the time. Zenlar was a planet which had achieved technological superiority to the point that everybody was stagnating. People had nothing to strive for, no ambition, nothing to attain. These are quite sophisticated, mature themes for a universe in which the subtext tends to be punching. And so you've got this world, you've got Norrin Rad, who's a scientist, and you've got Galactus. Kapang arrives on the scene, he wants to eat Zenlar. Norrin Rad says, okay, I'm going to offer you a deal, I will serve as your herald, and in return you don't eat my planet. He gets endowed with what Stanley eventually called the Power Cosmic, turned into a silver skinned freak who flies around on a cosmic surfboard, and that's the origin of the Silver Surfer. And that's so utterly different to anything else that Marvel has or had going at the time. Mm. And I think that is in part why the character has been so successful and so memorable to so many of its fans.
As far as you know, were they intending to bring the character back after the first three issues? Or was it the popularity of the character as three issues unfolded that they decided, let's not kill him off in part three, let's leave it open for a return engagement?
As far as I know, I think Stan, according to the anecdote, Stan was completely nonplussed by the character and sort of just was a little cynical about it, but was, whether won over by his own enjoyment of writing the dialogue or whether he was won over by the fan reaction, I don't know, but for whatever reason, the character became very popular and achieved the sort of lasting status that you dream of when you create new characters in these worlds.
Well, then I think something that's very telling about the Silver Surfer is that Jack got it right the first time. Visually, the character hasn't changed over the last 44 years. While Galactus, for example, when they've retold that origin story of Galactus coming to eat the Earth and the Silver Surfer as his herald, when that was reimagined first for the Ultimate Marvel Universe and then for the movie that came out a couple of years ago, Galactus is now some swirling dark cloud, perhaps with creatures in it, that's just going to engulf the world like some sort of black hole. While in the original, he's 100 foot purple giant.
it is worth restating at this point that I didn't get around to seeing the Fantastic Four 2 film, not because I have any particular comics of the purest form sort of attitude. I just never got around to it. But the Silver Surfer, from the footage I've seen, looked awesome. It looked really, really good. Lots of zapping through buildings and stuff. But I heard that Galactus was a swirling vortex of energy. Fine, you go with what works. And whether he was intended as this or not, Galactus, in a sort of analogy sense, was always destruction, unknown destruction, unforeseen destruction. And so, it's not too great a leap to see why so many Silver Surfer stories down through the years have been messianic in tone, because from the earliest days his role was as the herald of something unforeseen and something amazing. I'm not going to go so far as to say he was bringing the good news, because actually he was bringing the bad news, but it's the same idea. He was riding the bow wave of a complete change, a paradigm shift. And I think that persists in a lot of Silver Surfer stories to today. Mm.
The Silver Surfer miniseries that you wrote, apart from Gutsville, which is a miniseries you did for Image, which in many ways could have quite happily been printed in 2018, was the Silver Surfer your first American work in the sense that you were dealing with American characters, a very American publisher?
Yeah, I think so. And I think that I was quite blessed to begin my American comics career with a character who I can relate to, so I can relate to as Ron, but a character I enjoy so much. Yeah, Gutsville was an experiment which hasn't quite finished yet for reasons I won't bore you with, but the Silver Surfer In My Name miniseries I wrote was intended, in very cynical terms, to put some product on the shelves to coincide with the release of the movie.
Which you hadn't seen.
Which I hadn't seen. I don't pretend that I intended this, but it worked out quite nicely, because the way these shared universes work, Marvel, DC, are that they essentially turn character-led books, character-led magazines, into a sort of library-wide soap opera. That's how they operate, that is their business model. But once in a while, they want what they refer to as an evergreen story, which is a story which has no impact upon or reliance upon the wider continuity, the stuff which is going on in the universe, which is what they normally use to sell issues. And that's exactly what they asked me for. They wanted a story about the Silver Surfer, which could have occurred at any time, chronologically speaking, within his career. And it was going to sit outside the mainstream continuity. It was going to be self-contained. It wasn't going to impact upon any of the stuff going on planet Earth. And yeah, that was the background. And for somebody coming from 2000 AD, which is very self-contained and very much about creativity and bonkers ideas and do what thou wilt, it was great. I could just stick a bunch of crazy stuff in a story, and the editor said, "This is brilliant, we've not seen anything like this." Good.
So they didn't have any other requirements other than the fact that it'd be self-contained and have the Silver Surfer in it?
Yeah.
Because it is, in some ways, a reworking of that original tale, that the Silver Surfer comes to a planet, and later on there is the threat of Galactus coming to destroy the planet, even though you're twisting some of the elements of the story by dealing with issues of propaganda and the mythology of a character like Galactus, who could just exist as a propaganda tool and not necessarily be there at all.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think it goes to the heart of the character of the Silver Surfer that he is at his best, or at least he is at the stage in which I most enjoy him, when he blunders into situations with opposing moralities, where individually either morality appears to be perfectly reasonable, and yet here they are in conflict with one another, and he arrives in the middle of it, and what are you going to do? And so in the story that I wrote, it was sort of slightly tied into the whole, at the time, the US was being very proud of the fact that it had gone into Iraq and was you know, and all that stuff, and I don't want to pretend that I was writing some amazing parable type story, but it was all there. He arrived in the midst of a conflict. One side wanted independence and religious freedom, and they mistook him for their long prophesied messiah. The other side was under the impression that it was fine to civilize, and it was their duty to civilize the other side and to prevent them from being barbaric. And yeah, Norrin Rad, the Silver Surfer, shows up in the middle of it, and as in all his best stories, not that I would claim it was one of his best, but in all one of my favorite of his stories, had to unravel who was in the right and who was in the wrong. And of course the answer is nobody is. And actually, on an interesting side note, that is another interesting thing about the character, is that his prolonged arc, his character journey, has always been about drifting, philosophizing, soliloquizing on the things he sees going around him, and wondering at the nobility of beings. He's not about legality, he's not about morality, he's about nobility. And so it becomes quite interesting to inject him into these situations where you have two opposing realities, both of which seem on their own quite rational. And the downside is that he ends up being almost passive, because he doesn't want to be involved in punching. You know, your classic superhero thinks with his fists. He's going to punch something that seems wrong. Norrin Rad shows up and spends four pages contemplating the nobility of existence and whether or not this is a being which is worthy of sentience, and so on and so forth, and then decides, "I'm not going to have anything to do with this," and tries to fly away, and then gets dragged back into it, and that's the story, and that's what makes him beautiful, but it's also what makes him, generally speaking, quite unsuccessful as a commercial comic book character.
Well, I mean, those are two very messianic qualities, that you have a character who won't preach to people directly by saying you should do this, you should not do that, but engages in parables. Indeed, Stan Lee and Mobius's graphic novel about the Silver Surfer that came out in the late 80s was called Parable. And then the other aspect of a messianic character is judging an entire race or civilization, whether they should be allowed to either, you know, continue in their lives or be accepted onto the next stage of being.
Yeah, and I think that's been present at every stage of the character's journey. one of my favourite arcs, I guess, was quite early on when Stanley decided that the character was clearly so popular that he was going to become a sort of solo character. And the early episodes were drawn, I think, by John Buscema, was it? And there's a whole sequence where Silver Surfer has turned against Galactus. He has decided that the people of Earth have an inherent nobility, which means that they shouldn't get eaten by the enormous space god. And he betrays Galactus, and he is exiled onto Earth as a result. So all of his earliest solo stories are about him wandering on Earth. And so you come back to this messianic thing. He's the wandering philosopher. And at some point, he decides that the only way for him to heal all these terrible conflicts and violences that he sees around him is to set himself up as the ultimate enemy. And so he flies around, and you know, he's trying to reconcile. Bear in mind, this is the height of the Cold War. You know, he's trying to reconcile the US with the filthy pinko commies at the time, and all that stuff. And it doesn't work. But what occurs to me is that 20 years later, there's a very famous graphic novel, possibly the most famous graphic novel written, which I won't name for fear of spoiling, but which has as its payoff the same idea, that you're going to create an enemy which is going to unite all the opposing factions. And so these are really sophisticated ideas being used in a comic in the middle of the 60s at a time when your classic comic book, or rather classic superhero character, was quite one-dimensional.
Yeah.
And I say that with great affection, but this is why Silver Surfer was so different. Mm.
Well, obviously, like you said, the Silver Surfer visually was a character that Jack Kirby was very interested in, because when he moved to DC in the 1970s, he created a character called the Black Racer. He was basically the Silver Surfer painted black and on skis rather than a surfboard. But in terms of the mythology behind the character, do you think the personal philosophy and the personal religion of the creators has any influence on that? Speaking as someone who asked Eli Roth a couple of weeks ago whether being a Jew had any influence on him remaking The Exorcist, do you think the fact that both Stanley and Jack Kirby were two Jewish emigres in America creating an adolescent fantasy of, you know, the underdog who becomes a hero who can fight natural forces, whether that has any impact?
Wow, that's a very heavy question.
What's your religion, Simon? Did that feel
I have no religion, angrily so. and actually, yes, I think, choosing my words very carefully, I think that one of the beauties of this particular character is that he at all times has espoused an innate nobility, the idea that there is a way of doing things which is going to be good for society, a way of doing things which is going to be good for civilization, and actually, in his parlance, fellow beings, is the way that he would put it, which transcends law and transcends religion. The fact that that quite merrily incorporates helping the repressed perhaps fits in with what you're saying. From my point of view, it's almost an irrelevance, because his way of doing things has always been more about this difficult to define, nobility is the way that he's generally described, you know, the sort of the wandering noble who is, you're right actually, I mean, in a very cynical way, he's judging people he comes across, but I think he's judging them in very broad terms, as opposed to quite narrow sort of legal or religious or moral terms.
I suppose it just boils down to the fact that it's the model character that you can hang the most Christian aspects on, if you so require. Yours is probably quite a gentle hanging on of Christianity.
Although I did get him crucified on his own surfboard.
As one does. while conversely, for example, when Mark Miller, I think, wrote his noble, well, whoever it was, The Ultimate Marvel Universe, wrote a Silver Surfer mini-series as part of his Coming of Galactus trilogy, has him worshipped as a possible deity by a cult that has overtones of right-wing religious nonsense.
The character lends itself very well to that
role.
We go back to this idea that it is a herald of a terrible apocalyptic force. It is a wandering, androgynous, supremely powerful force which won't use violence if there is a philosophical and noble alternative. And these are all a billion miles away from most superheroes, but they're not that far away from what we like to think of as the messianic role.
Well, a few people have hung that on Superman.
Yeah, and quite rightly. I mean, I think it's an interesting thing to play with in all cases, but I think the Silver Surfer lends himself particularly well to that niche, and maybe in part at least it is something to do with this aesthetic iconography being, this is about as simple a drawing of a character as you can create. There's no silly costume, except for maybe the pants, which have been done away with in recent times. It's just a guy. A naked, amorphous, silver-skinned bloke. And you fill him up with whatever you want. Whatever philosophies, whatever religious overtones, and by God, he's been used as a messianic vehicle over and over and over again, not least by me. The only jarring thing is the bloody surfboard. and a lot of different writers and different artists have sort of explained that away in different ways. I think it was Straczynski did a recent Silver Surfer piece, you may correct me here, it's the one where it's a sort of out of continuity thing where it's about the death of the Silver Surfer. Did you see that one?
No.
I may be imagining this, stop me if I'm talking rubbish, but there's a scene where he is challenged on why he rides around a surfboard.
Mm.
And he says something to the effect of, once you've soared through empty space, outside of a spaceship, there's no going back inside. It's this idea of being able to behold the cosmos all around you 360 degrees. Quite like that.
Which makes me wish that we had John Carpenter here, because there's a very similar scene at the end of his debut movie, Dark Star.
Is it, Begara? I'm going to nod and pretend I know about it.
And on that note, thank you very much.
It's my pleasure.
Silver Surfer in Thy Name by Simon Spurrier and artist Ten Heng Huat is available as a Marvel Comics trade paperback in all good bookshops now, and Simon's latest comic, Fall of the Mutants, Smoke and Blood, featuring members of the X-Men fighting vampires, is available in comic shops now. His first non-franchise novel, Contract, is available in paperback. Hopefully there'll be another live panel borders event soon. In the meantime, the Victoria and Albert's resident comic expert Ian Rakoff will be giving a talk at Oxford University's Institute of Social and Cultural Anthropology, and that's on the subject of ethnicity and the 20th century American comic, at 11 a.m. on the 15th of October at 51 Banbury Road, Oxford. More info at www.isca.ox.ac.uk/latest. If you're a budding comics illustrator yourself, illustration company Pickled Ink is running a competition to find a new graphic novel illustrator. You have to be a current or recent illustration graduate from the last 12 months, and to work on a graphic novel written by the creator of Supergran, download more info at www.pickledink.co.uk. You can find out more info about all the above on our blog, www.panelborders.wordpress.com, and Panel Borders will be back at the same time next week. Thanks for listening.